And we're off. Okay, so, as I was saying, I forgot to put it on the sheet. For those of you who are watching online, I will have fixed it at that point, so if you're downloading the sheet from online, it will say that the topic of the day is seat seat. Specifically, we're going to be talking about the knots on our seat seat. It is the part that most people don't really know so much about. It's the main part, though. So we're going to jump right into it because, as always, I put way too many Mokoro down on the page. So we just have to run through it to try to get through this in time. Our first source is from the Talmud, Masechet Menachot. Masechet Menachot has, within the second chapter, the second half of it is all about tefillin and mezuzot, and actually the laws of Safrut. Scribal arts and writing are all based there. The third chapter is called Perikat Chelet, the chapter about Chelet, and it's all about Tzitzit. So from that third chapter, we start on Daf Lamed Chet, and it continues at the bottom of the page and continues to the next page. Amar Rava Shma Mina, says Rava, we can infer from this, and we're talking about the strings and what happens if something breaks. If a string breaks, where the knots are. Welcome.
Show up the time, look.
You're right on time. We literally read the first four words, so you're okay. So Amar Rava Shma, right, we're talking about tzitzit. Amar Rava Shma mina tzarich likshor al kol chulia v'chulia. We need to tie a knot for every single chulia. You'll notice, for the most part, in the translations, I did not translate chulia, I just left it as chulia. The way it's translated here, in the translation for the Gemara, which I take from the Sonsino translation, it translates it as a joint. A chulia is generally considered a section of wrapping, right? So in the style of tzitzit I have, a chulia is one of these little groups here, right? Each one of these are called chuliot. Standard tzitzit, the 7, 8, 11, 13, each grouping would be considered a chulia. For the most part, often they're just referred to as groupings, and we'll see as we go on why that is. So he says, you need to tie a knot for every single chulia, every single one of these groupings. The isalka datach lo tzarich, that if you would think no, had amre b'nei Rabbi Chia, it was taught by the sons of Rabbi Chia, gardume tchelet ksherim, gardume ezov ksherim. He says, the gardumim are, essentially if it's phrase, if the tzitzit strings fray, tongue twister, try it, then it's still kosher. And he says, gardume is zov ksherim, and also, I think it's hyssop, if it's a kind of branch, if that phrase, it's still kosher. I think that might have to do with the idea of having tzitzit made out of linen. Linen is a plant derivative, so maybe they're saying from the plant, if that starts to fray, that would still be considered kosher. And so then there's a bit of a, it goes on, it says, Kivan de ishtrele ila e ishtrele kula. But there's a challenge put here. It says, but if the knots come undone at the top, or if it starts coming undone at the top, it'll come undone the whole way through. So that's why he's saying you need a knot for every single chulia. If you just had the chulia, if you just had wrapping, fine. And if the wrapping comes undone a little bit, no problem. But if it totally disintegrates, if it starts to fray from top at the top, it'll end up going the whole way through. And then, you know, I've at least seen, I don't know if you have, some people's tzitzit at the bottom, the where they start coming unraveled, one knot will come out and the bottom part will come unraveled. And all of a sudden, I mean, the whole thing is just a huge long string. So that's what they're saying there. It says, Dilmait Katar. And he says, perhaps there were knots, right? Perhaps you could say that if you said there was a knot, it would have prevented this, right? So, again, when we're saying we need a knot for every chulia, They're saying because if you have a nut, it can prevent this total unraveling of your tzitzit. But Amar Rava, Shma Mina. So Rava goes on and says, learn from this. Keshar El Yon Da'oraita. He says, the top knot is from the Torah. De'i salka da'tach de'rabanan. That if you were to think that it was rabbinical, my itzrich lemishrei sadin b'tzitzit. Says, what's the, if you thought it was rabbinical, then why do you need any kind of clothing, any kind of garment to be connected to your tzitzit? Ultimately saying that if it's just strings coming off of your garment, then it doesn't work. If you look actually at the B'nai Menashe, there's a tribe in Africa, the B'nai Menashe. If you look, at, they have talitot, and they're generally white, and they have a line of blue. You know, in our talitot, we have black, or, you know, they just, at the very edge, they have one line of blue, that the threads from that one line of blue actually shoot off of the talus. And that's their tzitzit, right? It's just the threads come out, but they're not, it's not anything tied to it. It's part of the garment itself. And what they're saying is that's not what it is. It has to be tied. Otherwise, it's just a garment. You don't need tzitzit connected to a garment. The tzitzit are part of the garment. So we need this top knot to connect the strings to the garment. It's pshita. That seems obvious. Hatochef tchifa echat eino chibur. And he says, if you just kind of were to take the string and put it through the hole, right, then that also wouldn't count as anything. It's not connected to the garment, it's just strings pulled through a hole, right? You actually need to tie that knot to have the chibur, to have this connection. Elishma mina do'oraita. So therefore, we can learn out from this that that's do'oraita. When the Torah says we need a kanaf p'til tzelet, or we need our tzitzit on the corners of our garment, it's saying that you need strings connected to the garment via this top knot, and in order to fulfill that, you need that biblical commandment, you need that top knot, which is interesting to know. You know, we, like as I was saying, sometimes the tzitzit will come undone. That's not technically a problem. The main part of the tzitzit, biblically, is just that the top double knot should remain in existence, right? If it's just strings pulled through, it doesn't work. As long as you have one knot, you fulfilled your biblical commandment. I actually skip a little bit in the Gemara, and so it goes on. The Kamashur Chulia. So what's a Chulia? Tanya Rabbi Yomer, Kidei Sheichroch Veishaneh Veishalesh. He says, enough to wrap it around, and wrap it around a second time, and wrap it around a third time. That's a Chulia. When you wrap the string around three times, that's considered a Chulia. Ta'ana, Apochet V'lo Yifchot Misheva. And so it's taught by a Tana that's the minimum, and you shouldn't have less than seven of those, right? So you should have three wrappings, but you shouldn't have less than seven threes, right? Okay. V'amosif lo yisif al shoshesre. And anyone who adds more than seven chuliyot, you shouldn't have more than 13. So it seems from the simple meaning of the Gemara that of these groupings of three that you can have between 7 and 13. As we go on, we'll actually see the Rambam's opinion. The Rambam says 7 or 13, not leaving them in the middle, but we'll see that when we get there. Hapochet lo yifchot misheva kineged shivar rekiim. He says, what is it? So the Gemara says, what does it mean you shouldn't have any less than 7 of these? 7 is because there are 7 heavens. Right, 7 rakiyas, I guess, so yeah, we translate it as heaven. Mosif lo yisif al shloshesre, and anyone who adds shouldn't have more than 13. Why can I get shiva rakiim v'shisha avirin shebenehem? Why? Because we have these 7 rakiyas, and there's a avir, there's space between the 7 rakiyas, the 7 heavens, and so the 13 represents the 7 rakiyas, and each one of the spaces between. Fantastic. So here's a lot of very strange kind of language in terms of chulia. The Gemara is kind of explaining it in terms of the biblical commandment of tzitzit and in terms of how the knots and where they fall and how many knots. Because remember, at the beginning we said we need a knot for every chulia. But so does that mean that when you talk about 13, you need 3 and then a double knot and then 3 more and a double knot and 3 more and a double knot? Possibly. Let's go on. So we'll, the next source is Rashi, just on that same Gemara, and we're just going to go through Rashi one bit at a time. starts off Shema Mina, it's our, you know, third and fourth word in the Gemara. It says, what's Rava trying to teach us? Mida Amri b'nei Rabbi Chia gardume tchelet ksherim. So, Shema Mina, we're trying to learn something from what was taught in the by the sons of Rabbi Chia, that the curtailing, the undoing of, or the fraying of tchelet is kasher, is kosher. Amai hakevan denifsa ksat hagedil mishrei hahu kesher. Shabbosof hagedil. He says, so how does this work? Even though some of the gedil is the whole section of tzitzit that has knots in it. That's called the gedil. It's, you know, what grows out of that first knot, if you will. As long as there's still a knot at the end of it, it's still considered a gedil. It's still considered what it's supposed to be. That's why it can be kosher. V'kevan d'mishrei hahu kesher, mishrei ha-gedil. And as long as that one knot remains, the gedil still exists. V'ein shem gedil klal el shma mina yish kesher b'chol chluya. He says, but it's not going to have the name of gedil unless you have these knots. If there's no knot, how can it be considered a gedil? A gedil needs a knot. That's part of the definition, that it's going to be sectioned off through these knots. Hilchach, therefore, ki mishrei hahu kesher v'kayim a gedil b'shar ksharim. So, therefore, even if the bottom knot comes undone, you still have other knots that are going to maintain the integrity of the gedil, and so it'll still be kosher. So that's what we said in terms of things fraying, coming undone, and we'll go on. We said after that whole section, okay, so possibly there were knots, right? We said, why do we need every single one to have a knot? Just have a knot, right? If you have a knot, it's not going to all come undone. So Rashi says, klomar mimai detzarich leikasher b'chol chulia. So why do we need to tie a knot for every chulia? Dilma had amri deve Rabbi Chia. Maybe it's because of what was said by the house of Rabbi Chia. Hachik amar im kesher al kol chulia v'chulia havu gardumim. That if you, as long as you have this knot on every single chulia, havu gardumim ksherim. That's what's going to make the gardumim kosher. You need all the knots. It's not just one knot. You need all of them. Aval barav tzitziot lo kam mikshar gardumim. The rav tzitziot ein iksharim al kol chulia v'chulia. And he says, but that can't be exactly right. Why not? Because most tzitzit that we see, they don't hold that they don't makshir the gardumim by having knots the whole way through, right? They're makshir the gardumim, and they don't have it on every chulia. As long as there's a knot, we consider it kosher, right? It doesn't need this whole thing. So we go on the next one, kesher elyon. So the top knot, right? The top knot is the one closest to the beged. Haynu nami hahu kesher lamata halacha l'moshe misinai. So what's interesting, he says that the top knot and even the bottom knot are considered halacha l'moshe misinai. These are knots that we learned about Moshe, from Moshe Rabbeinu, right? The fact that the strings have to be weaved through and knotted, that's halacha l'moshe misinai. Klamar kesher echad betzitzit mihado oraita. So he says that if you were going to say, so why do we need it to say that both of them have this level? He says, because if you were going to say that I only need one, right, and that any one is fulfills a biblical commandment, and I don't include, he says, we need to include the idea of the top knot, because if I don't say that, that maybe I think that one knot at the end is enough to be mekayim the mitzvah. Why? Because if I wrap, and then I tie a double knot at the end, that double knot supposedly will keep everything above it okay. And so maybe that double knot is enough. So what he's saying is, no, you need the kesher elyon. When the Gemara comes and says you need the kesher elyon, it's saying really that is the ikar. It's the one at the source. And then after that you can have more twisting. And then at the end you tie another double knot. And so both of those are halacha l'moshe misinai, one to start it off, one to end it off, But the one that really fulfills the biblical commandment is the first one. That's the main one. Deoraita, the biblical command, it says, "Afilu yachol lichroch yafe litkayem b'lo kesher yom o yomayim psula." He says, let's say, you know how to tie strings really well. And you tie them in such a way that they're going to last, right? You wrap so tightly, and I don't know what you do, but you wrap in such a way that the strings will last without tying any kind of knot. He says, even though it's going to last, it still doesn't count. We're not only talking about lasting, we're talking about a biblical commandment that you need to have a kesher. There needs to be some kind of tying here. Ele chulia echad, hakafa shosha pamim. So now Rashi comes and he says, so what is a chulia? Right, we've been saying this word chulia the whole time, and as I said, I don't translate it the rest of the way through, I just say it as a chulia. Rashi says again, a chulia is three times around. When you wrap the string around three times, that's a chulia. Now, if you look on tchelet.com, T-E-K-H-E-L-E-T. They're the ones who put out the Petil Tchelet that we have now. You can actually see there's a tying guide, an online tying guide. And there's a number of different ways that people group off chuliot. We're going to see a few of them, not all of them. But there's a number of different ways in which chuliot are tied off and separated so that you can see the groupings of three. They show you how to do it. They actually have YouTube videos of how to do it. They have PDF diagrams of exactly how many knots and where the knots go and how many wrappings, and according to all these different opinions. It's an excellent resource. So if you really want to see the examples, that's the place to go for it. But he says, a chulia is these three wrappings. How it's done, there's a difference of opinion, but you need to go around three times, and that's considered a chulia. It says, lo yifchad misheva chuliyot, right? So when we said, don't be less than seven, you might have thought seven twists. No, seven groupings of three. And then last point was the shisha avirim, the spaces between the rikiyot, the rikiim, right? Spaces between the heavens. He says, shebein shiva rikiim, val shem atchelet dome leyam, v'yam dome lerakia. He says, so why are we talking about rakia? Because later on in the Gemara Menachot, a source which I actually didn't bring, even though it's the most famous source for why we have tzitzit, and the whole idea of uri tamota, when you see them, says why? Because you'll see your tzitzit, specifically you'll see the tchelet on your tzitzit, and that will remind you of the ocean, and that will remind you of the rakia, that will remind you of heaven, and that will remind you of the sapir al kisei hakavod. That will remind you of the sapphire stone that sits above the throne of glory, because they're all this kind of blue. So since it mentions rakia there, so therefore, the chuliyot are done in such a way to remind us of the rakia. They're done in such a way that even just seeing the tzitzit, to see that the gedil of the tzitzit is going to remind us of kisei hakavod, of Hashem, and going to hopefully bring a little bit of yirat shamayim on us, so we'll be zocher kol mitzvot Hashem v'asita matan. Tough. So that's Rashi. We're going to go on to the Tosfot. The Tosfot on Lamed Tet Amud Aleph goes on, and he starts giving us some ideas in terms of exactly how we need to tie these. So Rashi is kind of a little vague. The Gemara was a little vague. It told us a little bit about chuliyot. It told us a little bit about groupings. It told us that we need knots involved, but it didn't. And we said we need a knot at the top. That's pretty much as far as we've gotten, though, in terms of what you actually have to do. You need chuliyot, you need a knot at the top, you also need a knot at the bottom, but that one, if it comes undone, you're still fulfilling your commandment by the first one. So what's the rest of this, right? We see plenty of different ways that people have their tzitzit. So what are the rest of these? So the Tosfot says, on the same page, tzarich likshor al kol chuliyah v'chuliyah, the fact that you need to tie knot on every grouping of three, haynu achat shel lavan v'achat shel tchelet shem shtayim v'hashta, sheke'ein poched mesheva. He says, first you need a grouping of white, and then you need of the blue, shehen, which, and those are two. That's considered two chuliyah, right? V'hashta k'she'ein pochet m'sheva, oseh heiksharim, and he says, and since you can't have less than seven, you need to make, As long as you're not less than seven, you make five knots, samuch l'talit, kesher echad, v'achar kach shtei chuliyot, echad shel tchelet v'echad shel levan. So he says, first you do white and then blue, and then you tie a double knot, and then you do blue and then white, kesher echad, and then you make another double knot. Ad shem yisayim shesh chuliyot, harei arba aksharim, v'achar kach ose chulia shvi'it shel levan, kidei sheyhem yisayim b'levan, ואחר כך כושר אחד, הרי הקשרים, הרי חמש קשרים. ויש מפרשים לא יפחות משבע קריחות בין כל קשר וקשר. So what he's really saying, he's saying tie a double knot, then you start with white, so you do your white, then you do your blue, and then you tie a double knot, and he says, and then you do a blue and then a white, and then a double knot, and then a blue and then a white, and then a double knot, blue and white, double knot. And says you do this, so that each one of these groupings of blue and white will, you know, a few blues around and then a few whites around, will give you six chuliyot, and then you have a double knot, and these six chuliyot will happen once you have four knots, or at the end of it you'll have four knots, and then you tie another chuliyot of just white, so you finish on the white, and then you tie your last double knot, so you have five double knots, and it'll ultimately look, your tzitzit will look, let's see, white, blue, white, blue, or double knot, white, blue, double knot, and then white, blue, double knot, and white, blue, double knot. So now you have six whites and six blues, and then you do white, double knot, and end on that. So that's what he's saying there, and that's the way Tosfot says you should tie it. Now, one thing that's a little bit hard in terms of understanding all this is, especially when they're writing, there was no blue involved. Right? Even at that time, there was no blue. The blue had been gone since around the year 200 of the Common Era. 200, 250, that's when it seems that Tchelet stopped being used. The secret was lost. It seems pretty clear that the secret has been found. The way I've heard this described is that when they first came out with it, everyone was very skeptical, and nobody really wanted to touch it. And as time has gone on, the last 20, 30 years, since they've been putting out the Petil Tchelet, which is the one that's widely used today, just more and more people are buying into it. And the fact that Am Yisrael is saying, oh, I think there's something to this Tchelet, I think the Limud is right, I think that the source is right, and people from, you know, in terms of orthodoxy, from the more open-minded to even Haredim and, you know, Mekubalim are buying into it, are saying, okay, maybe there's something here, maybe there's something substantial here that we should take seriously. I actually heard in the name of Zalman Nechemi Goldberg, who is the Av Beit Din of the Eda Haredi, that everyone should wear it now. And he says, because if it's not right, then it's just like the white. So you're spending a little extra money on Hidur Mitzvah, but you're not breaking any commandment by wearing it. And he says, and at worst, or at best, but he says in the back, at worst, you're fulfilling a biblical commandment to have Tchelet, which was an interesting thing, right? You can fulfill a biblical commandment, or you can be holding where we've been holding for the last 2,000 years. So not such a big difference, except for, you know, the cost of your strength.
So you're saying if the chelet really isn't the chelet, you haven't taken anything away,
right? Perikat chelet actually starts off chelet lo ma'akev halavan ba'alavan lo ma'akev chelet. The blue does not prevent the white from fulfilling its part of the commandment, and the white doesn't prevent the blue from fulfilling its part of the commandment, which is why ultimately to have all white and no blue doesn't take anything away. It doesn't fulfill the mitzvah to have the blue, but it doesn't, if you have white or if you have blue, it doesn't take away from fulfilling anything else. The one thing where there is a distinction, which we'll see in source number five,
yes,
is that Tchelet permits Kilaim, right? Tchelet permits a mixture of wool and linen, or you can have wool tzitzit on a linen garment if you have tchelet. The one place where if it's not right would be an issue is that you still couldn't do that. So the idea is you should still have wool on wool and linen on linen, but actually other achronim have said don't wear linen. Just nowadays, stay away from linen. Don't wear linen garments because most of the strings out there are not made from linen. I know somebody who's searching high and wide to find linen tchelet and or linen tzitzit, and he can't because they don't make them really.
I was going to say, Rabbi, that it's logical having the tchelet because it doesn't take anything away from the tzitzit. Why, you know, because of that logic, why only in the last 20, 30 years? That logic could have been applied in over the last 2,000 years.
It still has to be the right tchelet, right? It's still supposed to be the right kind of blue. Actually, there might be another reason. The Karaites have just been using any kind of blue. They say, it doesn't matter. Take blue, take any kind of blue dye, dye or threads, and just be done with it, right? Say it's not a specific blue. And the idea is that tchelet is not kachol. Tchelet is not just blue. Tchelet is a very specific blue. So it has to be a blue that that meets certain requirements. I think around 120 years ago, the Ridzina Rebbe, whose name I can't remember, he actually wrote a book about the importance of tchelet and went searching and found a squid whose ink was a kind of indigo blue. And he said, and this ink, this squid fulfilled a particular part of the requirements of the animal that carried the tchelet, and that it had a pattern of 70 years. The idea was that it would come on land and be close to land, and then it would just go away and disappear. And then it would come back, and then it would go away again. And it was tracked that this kind of squid did this. So he said, so this must be the source for tchelet. And he took the dye, and it was this kind of indigo blue, and he said, this is tchelet. And actually, people still use that dye till today. Mostly Hasidim buy into it. It's actually a lot cheaper. One thing that you'll notice if you tie tzitzit using it is when you're tying it, when you're finished, your fingers are covered in blue, that the ink comes off the strings, and as time goes on, it fades, like to the point where you can see white coming through. And
the blue is coming off.
The blue comes off. It entirely comes off, where one of the traits of real tchelet is that it shouldn't come off. It should cling to the string, and it should stay there. They found strings of tchelet from, 2,000 years ago, and they're still blue. It might be faded with age, whatnot, right? Just like even white fades with age, right? Especially wool, it turns yellow, right? So it changes color with age. That's not the issue, but it's still there. It's on the string. The string is still, fully blue. That one comes off entirely, and it seems that the petit tchelet doesn't. The reason that some people still hold by that one is because it was discovered by a Rebbe. And so since it has the bracha of a Rebbe, modern Rebbes say, well, it has the bracha of a Rebbe, it must be as authentic as it comes. Whereas the petit tchelet, the one that is more widely used and much more expensive, comes from a snail that is, about this big, like a mollusk kind of thing. And a tiny little amount comes out. And it's from the blood of this mollusk, and when it's very, very little, and when it's collected in the vat and mixed, it's actually purple, which they've known for years and years and years that this was the source of argaman, which often when the Torah talks about the colors, it talks about tchelet va'argaman, right, the blue and the purple, right, and so they knew this snail to be the source of the purple. What happened around 30 years ago or so is that they had a vat of this purple that got left out in the sun. And when they came back to it, it was blue. Something about the chemical reaction that occurred under the sunlight changed it blue.
That's that.
And so that's this. Yeah, that's the one that I wear. That's a petit tchelet and it's the one that's so expensive because, as I said, only a very small amount comes out of every single snail, so a lot of work has to go into producing it for a single set of tzitzit. Great. So that's a little background into the modern uses of Tchelet, which is what we're going to keep talking about for now. As we get into the next couple of sources, though, we'll diverge from Tchelet specifically and more into the kinds of knots and tying that we are more used to and why. So the Rambam in source number 4 says the tells us exactly how to tie. It says, Lokeh chut echad min alavan, v'korech bo kricha achat al shar hachutin. Take one string from the white and put it around the rest of the strings as close to the garment as possible and then hold it there. And then take the blue string and do two more wrappings next to that white one and then tie it off. And these three wrappings together, the one white and the two blues, this is what we're going to call a chulia. It says, umarchik me'at, and leave some space, v'oseh chulia shniya, b'chut shel tchelet levado. And he says, make another one, just tchelet. Right? Another group of three, just tchelet. Umarchik me'at, v'oseh chulia shlishit. V'chen ad chulia achrona, shukorech v'ashtei krichot shel tchelet, v'krecha achrona shel levan. He says, and so you do this, three blues, three blues, three blues, three blues, until, and you continue like that, until you get to the last one, where you do two blues and then one white. So just like the Tosfot was saying, you start with white and end with white, Rambam's saying the same thing, but instead of saying you need a chulia of three whites, he's saying, no, you just need one white as part of your chulia included within the blues. Mivnei sheitchil b'levan mesayem bo, says, and since we started in white, we finish in white, shema'alim b'kodesh v'lo moridin, that we always go up in Kedusha, and we don't come down from Kedusha. V'lama yitchil b'levan, k'dei sheyesamuch l'kanaf mina. And he says, and so why do we start with white? Because it should match, the first one, it should match the garment. Since our garments are white, since our tzitzit are white, and you'll actually notice that, even when you go to, you know, modern stores and you can buy different colored begeds for tzitzit, whether they're tie-dye or black or mesh or this, they always have a white square on them. Even on talitot, they have a white square on the corner. And that white square is specifically to say, even if the whole garment is not this color, that at least this much of the garment is, and so therefore my strings are white, because the strings are supposed to match the garment. It says, so that's why you specifically start with the white and then you move up to the blue, but you will have to end the way you started. And he says, so this is the same thing you do on all the corners. So Hasagot HaRavid, the Ravid is Avraham ben David. Ravid also stands for Rosh Av Beit Din, which is what they call the head of a rabbinical court. But this Ravid was a Ravid, was a Rosh Av Beit Din, but he was also Rabbi Avraham ben David. And so he's a commentator on the Rambam throughout the Mishnah Torah. He has his Hasagot, he has his addendums, and generally speaking, he challenges the Rambam, as he will do here. V'lokeh chut echad min alavan v'chulei. So he says, references what the Rambam says in terms of tying these knots, and says, "Ad barba knafot." You do the same thing on all the corners. Ketav ha'ravid zal says, "What did he say?" Zeh ha'seder ein lo shoresh v'lo anaf. Says this order doesn't have any source and doesn't have anything to stand on. There's nothing that it's coming from. Rambam's making it up. Lama yoter betchelet mebilavan shehu mina kanaf mimenu matchil uba mesayim. He says, why would you have more blue than white? That doesn't make any sense. The levan, you start with the white. The levan is the natural color of the string itself. That's how you start. That's how you end. Uvrikrichot habhu mimaet einze ki im shegayon gedolin. Says it. But when you're wrapping them around the rest of the strings, you're going to minimize the white. Says, this is a huge mistake. Says, V'ha Gaon, Rav Naturnai Gaon, he was from the Gaonic period, 900s, early thousands. Svarle Sider Oto Yafe Sidur Na'eh, he explained it nicely. He gave a nice order, or a proper order, in terms of how you should tie it. Al derech sh'amra halacha, and he says, and it's the way that was taught in the halacha. V'kama shirchulia k'dei sh'yichroch v'yishunev yishlesh atchelet kai. And he says, and how much is a chulia? Like we said in the Gemara, as much as you need to go around once and twice and a third time, and that's talking about the tchelet. And I actually left out the rest of what he says because it's quite lengthy, but what he ultimately says is, for every time you wrap around, you should have a white together with a blue, right? So ultimately, if you look at tchelet.com, you'll see the Ravid is white, blue, white, blue, white, blue. Like a single string of white, a single string of blue, a single string of white, a single string of blue, just because you're holding both strings together as you're doing your wrapping. And he does that in groupings of three. Right? So have a group of three like that, and then go on. And that's what he considers the chulia. So that's as far as we're going to go really in terms of tchelet, because so that's where they stopped discussing it. 1,000 years ago, they stopped discussing it. Part of the reason might be because Rambam, especially, was a big fighter against the Karaites. One of his biggest problems in Egypt, when he was living in Egypt, was the strength of the Karaite community. That he came out staunchly against them, with the strength of, you know, to show the strength of the Rabbanim and, you know, and of Chazal and their logic and reasoning and how everything is really, that is Dat Torah, and the way the Karaites were doing it was very misguided. And so, especially if we were saying the Karaites had this blue, right? He's saying it's very strong for him to say, look, this is how you do it with blue, and don't confuse yourself. Now, I'm actually going to take a step back before we move on. A lot of people with Rambam tie a double knot at the top, because like we said in the Gemara, the Kesher Elyon is the main thing. That's the fulfillment of the biblical commandment. And beyond that is essentially extra. So a lot of people will tie a double knot at the top, and then even if they tie Rambam, then they'll tie the Chuliyot. And even if there's no Tchelet, they'll still tie all white the way the Rambam says, just three whites, and then leave a space in three whites. And the way the Rambam describes it, each chulia actually holds its place. Right? It doesn't need a knot to hold it in place. It holds its place by itself. It's essentially, it's wrapped one way and then wrapped on top of the string and pulled through. So it becomes a knot unto itself. But a lot of people still tie this top knot, even Sfardim, to say that, you know, the Gemara says you need the top knot, so that's it. Now, there's a Rav, who is Rav Kapach, Zichrono Livracha, he was one of the greatest commentators on the Rambam. He is a Yemenite, Rav, who had a tremendous tradition from generations of Yemenite rabbis who considered their tradition stemming from the Rambam. They spoke Judeo-Arabic. That was his language at home. So most of the Rambam's writings, not in the Mishneh Torah, but in Moreh Nevuchim, and even a lot of other works, in Chobot HaLevavot, which is Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Bakida, and any other work that was written in this Judeo-Arabic, he translated. And they had been translated by other people, but he would go through them and he'd say these other people didn't know what they were talking about, because they were just trying to interpret the language based on what they could. This is the language I grew up speaking. So he retranslated and reinterpreted, and his commentaries on the Rambam are considered of the most authoritative. And when it comes to that idea of the top knot, doing a double knot, he says this is not what Rambam said. Rambam said du chuliyot. He didn't say anything about doing a knot above the chulia. Rambam's chuliyot in and of themselves are knots. It's interesting. I've seen only one person do this. There's an idea that Rambam, that there's two ways to tie Rambam. Rambam according to the Temanim, and Rambam according to the Tosafot, which is strange because Tosafot are not Sephardi, they're not from Provence, in Ashkenaz. But the people who tie Rambam according to the Tosafot have a lot of double knots. It's essentially do a double knot and then you do 3, and then a double knot, and then 3, and then a double knot, and then 3, and then a double knot, and then 3. And it's just, it's really wrapping, and without the double knot, it's not going to hold. The people who tie Ramam according to the Tehmanim, it's much harder to get the Chulia, but the Chulia stays of its own nature. So Rav Kapach says, that's the way to do it, and don't add any knots. No knot at the beginning, no knot at the end. You just want a chuliyot surrounding the other 7 strings and be done with it. So don't confuse yourself in the details, which he's saying a lot of people do, and they're making mistakes. Even though the Ravid says that the Rambam's whole shita is a mistake, but that's, you know, that's how it is. So we're going to move on. Source number 5 is the Tur. The Tur is Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher. The foundational text for the Beit Yosef commentary, which led to the Shulchan Aruch, says, "Vayikach arba chutin mitzad echad v'arba mitzad echad v'yikshor shtei pamim." He says, "Take the strings and put them through the hole, and that then tie a double knot." V'acharkach yichroch chut ha'aruch saviv ha'shiva. And then he says, "Take the longer string." So what he's saying is, when you have these strings, one of them is longer. Take the longer string and wrap it around the other 7. And he says, "Vizman shayat chelet hayat tarich ledakdek v'kricha lasot shiva chuliyot kasher hem meforashim begemara." He said, in the times when there was chelet, yeah, you had to be careful about how many chuliyot you did. Right? Just like the Gemara said, you have to have minimum 7, maximum 13. But now, she'en lan et chelet, en latzutam mekiel aim, el tzemer, letzemer v'pishim v'pishim. He says, but now we don't have chelet. So you can't have kilaim, you need wool on wool or linen on linen. Vegam ein tzarich ledakdek v'chuliyot. He says, and you also don't need to be careful about your chuliyot. These groupings of 3, don't worry about it anymore. These are something that are specifically connected to tchelet. If there's no tchelet, the idea of chuliyot a little bit goes out the window. He says, v'arambam zal katab min hagim lichroch v'chuliyot ke'ein shekorchim b'tchelet. And when the Rambam wrote about chuliyot, as we saw, he was writing about tchelet. He was specifically writing about the mitzvah of tchelet. The Adoni Avia Rosh Zal, and my father, the Rosh, lo haya midaktek. My father was not careful in terms of these chuliyot. He didn't have chuliyot in his tzitzit. Bal Ha'aruch Katavin, the one who wrote the book, the Aruch, which is also a commentary, one of the first commentaries on the Gemara in terms of understanding the Aramaic, Katab de Ha'idna, Ein Tzarich Ledakdek B'Kricha V'Afil Im Karach Rova O Lo Karach Ba Ela Chulia Achad Kshera. And he says, but now, to the point where we don't need to worry at all. He says, even if you did just a small chulia, you did 3 wrappings of the chulia, and that was the end of your wrapping, or you tied a lot of spinning, you just spun one string around all the rest of the strings, you know, a dozen times, let's say 13 times, just for good measure. He says, it doesn't matter. It's all kosher, right? Elahi kar mitzvata sheichroch ad sheyeh bekricha im hakesher kerochav godel. The kosher shtei pamim. He says the main thing is that you should have the width of a godel, whatever this godel is. Oftentimes, it's described that should be about a palm's length, right, or a tefach really is, right, the width of your palm. That it should be approximately that, but really a godel just means any length. Right, you need some kind of outgrowth there from that first knot. Because sher shtei pamim, and you tie another knot. V'chozer v'korech, and you go back and you do another few wraps. V'chen yaseh ad shishalem lehek sharim v'arba krichot b'nehem. He says, and you do this until you have 5 knots and 4 groupings of wrapping between them. Really, the numbers don't matter. According to the Torah, the numbers don't matter. If you do 3, if you do 7, if you do 8, 11, 13, if you do 9, 11, 13, which we'll see, it doesn't matter. The idea is you should have these wrappings and double knots between them. Yeah, kol karuch rochav tefach, and he says every kruch, which is really a godel, every kind of grouping of knots should be at least a tefach. The hashar shtei tefachim, and he says, and the strings that hang below what he calls the kruch, what we've been calling the godel until now, should be 2 tefachim. It should be double. So if you have your tzitzit, it should be 1/3, 2/3. 1/3 is the knots, and 2/3 is the string hanging down below. It says ve'od yesh min hagot acherot ba'asiyato ve'kasher katavti ken hu ikar, and he says there are different ways to do this, but what I've written is the main thing. You need to have five knots, and you need to have one string wrapping around other strings between them, and that's where we're going to end the discussion. There are opinions out there that say it has to be specific. Don't worry so much about them. The Shulchan Aruch disagrees with that. So it goes on, source number 6, Yikach arba chutim mitzad zeh v'arba mitzad zeh, starts in the same way, take four from this and four from this, yikshor shtei pamim se'al gav zeh, make a double knot, v'achar kach yikhro chut aroch saviv ha'shiva k'tot krichot. He says, and therefore, and then take the long string and go around the other seven a few times, v'kosher shnei pamim se'al gav zeh, make a double knot, v'chozer v'korech. So far, he said the same thing. V'chen yaseh ad she'eshlim le'chamesh k'sharim k'fulim v'arba avirim b'nehem le'im k'richot. He says, this is what you should do. So far, he's just saying like the tour. This is what you should do until you have five double knots and four groups of wrapping between them. Ein shir le'krichot, rak shiu kol kruch v'kshirim rochav arba gudalim. He says, as long as the spaces and the knots are the rochav of a godel, right? A godel, it really just means a space. I think this is actually the width of a finger. I forget exactly which finger. I think maybe if it's the width of your pinky finger, right? If you were to put your pinky finger, it's, as long as it's that width, that's enough for the space between each knot. V'naf shmone godalim. So the top part of the tzitzit needs to be arba godalim, or four fingers, right, which is around the tefach as well. And below that bottom knot, the strings that hang out need to be eight godalim. So what the tour said is one tefach, two tefachs. Here he's saying four godalim and eight godalim, which is approximately the same. Haga. Now comes the Rama. It says, v'im ha'arich b'tzitzit. Yir'esh shlishato yegdil v'shtei chalakim anaf. And he says, and if you were to go along with your tzitzit, he says you should see that one third should be the gedil, one third should be, right? It's funny, they're using different language for the same things. One third should be the knot, and two thirds should be the strings that hang out, based that on the Rambam. V'nohagim lichroch ba'avir rishon sheva krichot. And he says, what do we know, Hag? What do we actually do? We do seven in the first one, v'sheni tesha, and we do nine in the second one, v'shlishi yod aleph, and the third one 11, and the fourth one 13. Sholim kulam mem, that all of them together, 7, 9, 11, 13, equals 40. Kiminyan Hashem Echad, which is the numerical value of Hashem Echad. Sholim lamed tet v'im Hashem hem mem. Says which Hashem Echad, the value of that is actually 39. But when you say, oh, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one, so you add that one, and now all of a sudden you have 40. So it works out nicely, according to that opinion, which is the Rama and the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what's the problem with that? Does anyone know? How do we tie our tzitzit when we do it five double knots and things, strings between them? Do you know what the numbers are? 7, 8, 11, 13. So why does he say 9? Why does the Shulchan Aruch say 9, and where does the 8 come from? So we'll look at the Taz. Source number 7, the Taz, Rabbi David Levi Siegel, he's one of the main commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, and any Shulchan Aruch, he's one of the surrounding guys, the first Nosek Helim that you look at, says, Ubisheni Tesha, and bringing commentary on the idea, the second one is 9. Bekavanot ha'ari, katuv b'sheni shmoneh. It says in the Arizal, the 15th century Kabbalist in Tzfat, who was responsible for, said most of modern day Kabbalah, everyone who studies Kabbalah nowadays sources themselves to his teachings. Whether they're accurate or not is besides the point. Not his teachings, their teachings, what he taught. Whether that's accurate, besides the point. But everyone relates back to him and refers back to him. Uviersham ta'amol pi ha-kabbalah, v'nachon lishmo el ha-kabbalata. And the Rizal's reasoning is because this is what we do. This is our tradition. I have a received tradition that we do 7, 8, 11, 13. It's not 7, 9, it's 7, 8. And the Magen Avraham, who, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim, on one side you have the Taz, on the other side you have the Magen Avraham, he says, "V'shein yitet u'v'shla," the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, which is another medieval book both Musar and Halacha and Kabbalah. It's a very well-rounded text. Katav asot b'sheni shmona. He says he also wrote to do eight. Va'azum mechaven k'minyan Hashem echad. And he says, and therefore, it's going to actually equal the gematria of Hashem echad, right? V'kach katav alavush, v'kach katav b'chavanot. And he says, and this is what's written in the Levush, which is another commentary in the Shulchan Aruch, and this is what's written in the Kavanot of the Arizal, just like the Taz mentioned. So, we have these sources that all say eight. But the Shulchan Aruch brought nine, so everyone here seems to be challenging that. V'lechem chamudot, and so he brings down another text. He says, Katav shebetzitzit shel Rabbi Shlomo Mocho. So Rabbi Shlomo Mocho, just as an aside, was a big rav in Spain. He was a Sephardi rav in Spain who was one of the biggest proponents of making aliyah from Spain around the time of the Inquisition, actually in advance of the Inquisition. There's actually a story that in 1490, that a lot of the Jewish leaders in Spain got together and they said, maybe we should make aliyah. Maybe we should go to Israel and we should try to buy land there. And so they said, okay, you know what? We'll send a group of emissaries to the Turkish monarchy and we'll see if we can buy Eretz Yisrael. Makes sense, right? They were a very wealthy community in Spain. They said, let's see if we can do this. They sent their emissaries, went to the leaders of the Ottoman Empire, and they said, can we buy Israel? And they said, sure. Fantastic. So these emissaries come back to Spain. In 1491, a year later, they come back and they say, success, we can buy Israel. The Ottomans are willing to sell us Israel, and we can go there and we can make Aliyah and it'll be ours. And, you know, as it is, somebody had to raise their hand and say, excuse me, I'm not so sure. Is it really time to go back to Israel? How can we buy Israel and just make Aliyah? Aren't we waiting for Mashiach? Doesn't Mashiach have to come back? The age-old argument, right? Doesn't Mashiach have to bring us to Israel? And so they said, you know what? We hear what you're saying. Let's think about it for a year. 1 year later, was the Inquisition initiated. And so that was the end of that. All the money, Jewish money, was confiscated. No chance of buying Eretz Israel anymore from the Ottomans, and a lot of people got killed. One of those leaders who was pushing for the Aliyah was Rabbi Shlomo Mocho. He was also one of those who was killed for not wanting to give up his beliefs. In his opinion, it says, Hayaba Avir Rishon Yud Krichot. There were 10, the first section, right after the first double knot, there's 10 raps. V'achar Kachay, and after that, 5. V'chulei Kashem HaAvaya. And he says, so forth, like Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, the gematria of each letter being 10, 5, 6, 5. So he says, so that's what your knot should be. There should be 10 in the first one, 5 in the second, 6 in the third, and 5 in the fourth. So what's interesting then, the Ketav HaKetavim Shetzirich Lasot HaGdil Chuliyot V'chol Chuliyah Shlosha Krichot Klomar Shalachar Sh'asav Shlosha Krichot Yerchik Ma'at V'kumo Shaketav HaRambam. And he says, but there are other writings that say it should be like the Rambam, that even regardless of how you're doing it, you should have it in groups of three. So another opinion, this is actually the opinion that's taken by Chabad, is that they have groupings within the 7, 8, 11, 13. They still hold 7, 8, 11, 13, but they have groupings by tying essentially a loop around each group. So they group the 7, 8, 11, 13 into different groupings that they call chuliot. And at the end of all these groupings, actually, you have 7 chuliot that are of 3. But it's really, it's 1, 2, 3, 1 is the first one, so that's your first 3. And the next one is 2, 3, 3. Because you have to get 8, so you have 2 more 3s, so that's 3 3s. And then 11 is 3, 3, 3, 2. So now you have, where are we at in terms of that? So you have 6 groupings of 3, but 11 altogether. And then you have, what's the 13? It's 1, 3, 3, 3, 2, 1, I think. But in the end, you have, In the end, you have at least 7 groupings of 3. I think if you do it 13 groupings altogether, I'm not 100% sure. That's the way Chabad does it, and that's the way they do it for Tchelet as well, in terms of everything should all be Tchelet except for the first and the last, because that's the way it is. So what's interesting about all of these ties, though, there's something that connects them all. Have you noticed what it is? 30, the regular one is Hashem Echad. The regular one is saying Hashem is one. This one is saying, it's just Hashem's name, right? Rabbi Shlomo Mocha says, it's Shem Havaya, right? It's Hashem's name. The knot should remind you of Hashem's name. Our tzitzit are trying to remind us of Hashem, right? Whether you're talking about Rambam with Tchelet in the 13 or the 7 Rikiim, because that's going to remind us of Shemaim, or the 7 and the spaces between them, because that's going to remind us of Shemaim. The idea is that we're supposed to see our tzitzit, and it's not the strings of our tzitzit, right? There's a famous story that people like to tell, that there was a kid who was about to do the wrong thing. He was, his inclination got the better of him, and so he went to a part of town he shouldn't have gone to, and he was going to behave improperly with a woman. And as he was with her, and he was taking off his tzitzit, the string smacked him in the face, and he was like, oh, what am I doing? And he put on his clothes and ran away. But that's not it. It's not about the string smacking you in the face. It's about seeing the knot specifically. It's not even the strings. The strings are good. You need to have the strings. The strings are going to remind you, oh, wait, I have knots there too. But it's the knots. The main part of Uri Tembo Tov, the main part of seeing your tzitzit, is seeing the knots of the tzitzit.
I didn't know that.
Now you know.
I did not
know
that.
So,
No.
So then the knots is amazing. All this stuff is talking about the knots. The knots remind us of Hashem. The knots remind us of Shemaim. And so we need the strings, ultimately, to guide our eyes towards the knots. There's actually a very funny story of the Amshinover Rebbe. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the Amshinover Rebbe. He is known for taking a very long time to do things. If you want to light Hanukkah candles a day after Hanukkah, don't worry, he's still lighting his 8th candle. But that's not a joke. In Israel, he is around. He's the 3rd Amshinover Rebbe now. It's interesting, the guy who is the Amshinover Rebbe now was not like this. That's another story, which I'm not going to talk about now. Maybe later, if you want to ask. But the Amshinover Rebbe, everything is a very long time. It's very kavanadik. I have a friend, one of his things in life is just to go around visiting Rebbes. And I asked him once, have you ever seen a Rebbe who you really felt like, spiritually, he was changing things. He says, when I was by the Amshinover Rebbe, just the way he davens, the way his body moves and the motions of davening, you feel something in the world changing by him. He takes a long time, and he also does everything very late. He's also Talmid Chacham, so he has a particular halachic understanding that allows him to do it within the framework of halacha, even though most of us would look at it and be like, okay, the guy is just missing it. There's a story of him that he once went to the mikvah, and after he came out of the mikvah, he was putting his tzitzit on, and then he just sat down and closed his eyes and was just sitting there without moving. And, you know, he went to the mikvah first thing in the morning. He was going to daven nates, or he was getting up first thing, 4 nates, and he was just sitting there. People come in, and they go, and they come, and they go, and they come, and they go. Finally, the guy who, you know, cleans the mikvah at the end of the day comes in. Says, oh, Amshinover Rebbe's sitting right here. Okay. And he goes and he cleans up, and the Rebbe's still sitting right there, and it hasn't moved. Okay, and he goes and he does some extra work. And finally, it's to the point he has to go, and he's going to lock the door, but the Rebbe's inside. So, you know, he put her up, taps him on the, you know, and the Amshinover Rebbe opens his eyes, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to hold you back, and start, you know, gets dressed, and they walk out together, and he says, you know, Rebbe, if you don't mind my asking, what was happening? Where were you? And he says, I was putting on my tzitzit, and I saw them. And I thought, Uri Tamoto, you'll see them. Uzchartem, and call me Tzvot Hashem, and you'll remember all of God's commandments. So I sat down, and I started going through Taryag Mitzvot. I started going through the 613 Mitzvot. So he was doing that in his head. So it took a little while. Where are I actually going to that's a nice transition, because we're going to see why that's potentially important right now in our next source, source number 9. When we see our tzitzit, they're supposed to remind us of Hashem, and not only that, they're supposed to remind us of mitzvot Hashem and how to do them. So source number 9 is from a book, Keter Shem Tov. It is one of the primary books of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov. It was compiled by a Rabbi Yehuda Lev Meir, who is also the author of a book called Or HaGanuz. Or HaGanuz is a book where he, in every single parsha of the Torah, he finds the name Aleph He Vav He, which is called the hidden name, because it's not actually one of the names of Hashem. It's a combination of Aleph He Yud He and Yud He Vav He, and it's a combination of the two, and according to I think it's in the Kabbalah, I don't know, it's considered the name of Dat, right? It's considered the name of knowledge, and it has the numerical value of Tov, of good. And so the idea, it's the knowledge of Tov, right, from Etzadat Tov Vara, that this name somehow imparts the good in the world. And it's the most famous place where it's the first letters of words is Et HaShemayim Ve'et HaAretz, at the very beginning of Bereshit, Bereshit Bara Elokim, Et HaShemayim Ve'et HaAretz. So the first letters there are Aleph Ke, Yud, or Aleph Ke Vav Ke. And so this whole book goes through every single parsha in the Torah and pulls out all the times that those letters come together as the first or last letters of words, and then tries to learn something from it. It's a very interesting book, very hard to read, very hard to actually give over any kind of drush. It's
but
good within its place.
It was written where they showed the lettering and how they predict things in the
book. Right, the Bible codes, yeah.
The Bible code.
So it's a similar kind of thing. It's a great concept, a nice idea, but it's very hard to actually teach anything over because it's so specific to these random, seemingly random occurrences of this and the order, and he really does a good job in trying to figure it all out. But it's anyway, he is one of the people responsible for this compilation of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov called Keter Shem Tov. Again, it's one of the best ones. One of the nice things about Keter Shem Tov that I like is every single teaching in it starts with Itba Gemara. Not every single one, but most of them start with it says in the Gemara. Really saying that the Baal Shem Tov isn't saying anything new. He's just trying to show you what the Gemara really meant. He's trying to show you what Chazal were, what their Kavana really was. But the teachings are often very long, and so it's hard to get through the whole thing. I've thought, you know, once to sit down and go through it and, you know, essentially do the same kind of shir, but learn through those Gemaras and get to the Baal Shem Tov. Maybe for another time. In the meantime, we're here, so Keter Shem Tov, he says, V'hine adam osem mitzvah, kigon atifat talit v'tzitzit, alfa pisha nireh le'adam shu davar katan, alfa pichen ha-kadosh baruch hu osem min kol mitzvah, o min kol chidush Torah lishma, shamayim chadashim v'aretz chadasha. So he brings something from the introduction to the Zohar, and he says, any mitzvah a person does, whether it's wrapping yourself in your talit, or you're putting or having tzitzit on your clothes, on your four-cornered garments, so even though it seems simple, what is it? Okay, I put on a shirt and it happens to have some strings on it. Okay, I put on my talis in the morning. Wonderful, fantastic. Saying it's it is fantastic. He's saying don't think it's small. This is huge. He says why? Because any time a person does a mitzvah, even if it's simple to the person, or he has a chiddush in Torah, or he has some kind of novel interpretation of Torah, for the right reasons, not to build himself up, but, you know, he's learning Torah and he comes to this novel interpretation. It says, Hashem takes that and he renews the heavens and the earth. He makes them new. Kamosha anu amrim ken titatef nishma tiba orat tzitzit haole taryag. And he says, we can learn this from the fact that before we put on our talit in the morning in Mosi Durim, it includes a paragraph which is really a kavana, an intention, to say, this is what I'm hoping to accomplish by putting on my tzitzit. And by, when you say, it says, just as I'm wrapping my body in tzitzit, so too wrap my neshama in the light of tzitzit, ha'olet haryag, that equals 613. Now, generally, when we say tzitzit equals 613, we're saying the word tzitzit itself, if you write it with two yuds, the Torah actually never writes it with two yuds, it's always tzadik yud, tzadik taf, but if you write it with two yuds, the word itself would have the numerical value of 600, and then you have eight strings and five knots, 13, you have 613. Right? So you think tzitzit themselves equals 613. He says that's not it. It's the light of the tzitzit is 13, is 613. And where do we see this? He says, Hermez l'taryag ororot. This is a hint that there are 613 lights shining down. I'm not sure from where and exactly how, but they are, right? When you put on your tzitzit, that's how it, there's 613 lights. De'ote or kisalma, right? When we wrap ourselves, or saying the Baruch Hinafshi before putting on, says de'ote or kisalma, that we wrap ourselves in light as within a garment. So he's saying that the garment of tzitzit actually contains this light. Ge'ud levesh levesh Hashem ozit azar. He says with glory does Hashem dress himself in strength. That's, oz is like might, it's more than that. And it says oz he does our strength and he does our, it's like a, I guess, a gird. He puts it on. He wraps himself in it, but he wears his garment of oz. And he says, now here he says, Hit Azar Gimatra Taryag. And he says the word Hit Azar, that he really puts it on, right? That he, I'm trying to think, what's the word for Hit Azar? I feel like when you put on armor or something like that, something that's really on you, you know, you strap it on. From now, all we know is really hockey, right? You put on your hockey pad and you strap them on and you're, you know, bulked up, or a football player, same kind of thing. You know, you put on your padding, same thing. The strength of Hashem is, he does this, he dresses in this might, and he says, Hitazar is gematria taryag. Hitazar, the word itself, has the numerical value of taryag, and it's this might which is understood as something that Hashem puts on. So too, we put on our talit, and it's supposed to be light for our neshama. So it's just, he's saying that this is a correlation in terms of how we dress, and this, that we're putting on our tzitzit, and that it's bringing us the light of these taryag. And so too, how do we know that we're doing it like Hashem? Because we are blessed to Hashem, and Hashem made Shemayim Ba'aretz. Therefore, by us putting on tzitzit, we allow Hashem to take the light of the taryag and to essentially renew the world and the heavens. That is, when we're putting on our tzitzit, Hashem is constantly, as long as we're wearing our tzitzit, Hashem is constantly renewing Shemayim Ba'aretz. Aidei mitzvot v'chidush Torah shalachem. For every person's Torah and mitzvot, whether they're big or small, whether we think they're big or small, tzitzit seems very minimal, right? But you do it, he's saying it's an amazing, amazing thing. V'mferesh ha-shamayim shamayim la-shem. Aidei ha-kavana ha-kadosha shehu l'shem ha-kadosh baruch hu oseh shamayim chadashim. Since we say Shemaim, Shemaim, Hashem, Hashem has the heavens, the fact that we do a mitzvah for the sake of Hashem, for the sake of Shemaim, allows Hashem to renew heaven. Va'aretz natan livnei adam, and since Hashem gave earth to us, perush al yidei asya gashmit shal mitzvot, osa kadosh baruch hu mehem artzot hachayim. He says, and it's the doing of the physical commandment, right? Like, you know, it seems tzitzit, maybe there's supposed to be this kind of ethereal thing, maybe I'm supposed to see them and something amazing is supposed to happen, right? And what we've seen from now is, no, tzitzit are supposed to remind you of Hashem. And the main thing is, when you get reminded of Hashem, and you say, I'm doing this mitzvah for Hashem, just even on that level, that allows Hashem to remake the earth, in such a way that it becomes artzot chayim, becomes a place of life. Remember our first year when we spoke about waking up, we spoke about the difference of living a life that's alive and living a life that's dead. And he says, by doing these mitzvot, doing these physical mitzvot, this gashmiut, it allows us to have, to live in a land of life. And when you recognize this, even such a simple thing like putting on an extra shirt in the morning, it becomes such an important thing, because you recognize that something's happening beyond. So to see what's really happening beyond and how this works in terms of how we're supposed to relate to that, okay, that's nice, something's happening beyond me. I'm doing something simple and something great is happening. That's wonderful. It's beautiful. It's a nice idea. It makes me feel all warm and cuddly inside. But, you know, tachlis, how am I supposed to relate to that? So for that, there's a Sidur Makor Chaim. Makor Chaim, it's compiled by a Rav Shmuel Heschel Friedman. It's a very interesting story. The guy is a Brasov Chassid, and what he did was anything that related at all to the Siddur at all in any Brasov writings ever, he extracted them and made the Siddur. The Siddur is, you know, this thick, and that's only for weekdays. You know, he has one equally thick for Shabbat and Chagim. And the idea is, you know, there's a lot to say, and so he just brings it all. And he brings something that he quotes from Rabbi Natan of Breslov. I couldn't actually find it in Likutei HaLachot, but so I brought it just from the Siddur. And he says like this, Ayidei tzitzit mitaknim et habigadim valvushim shem bechinat medameh. He says, by wearing tzitzit, we are rectifying clothing. Right? Clothing is nice, but when you use clothes, not just as clothes, but for a mitzvah, he says you bring it to a whole new level. And he says, not just bigadim, levushim, which are garments, right? And he says that this is the, this implies our imagination. How do our garments imply our imagination? He says, ki medamehu levush hasechel. Our imagination is the garment of our mind, right? It's one thing to, you know something academically. Okay, I can teach you this and tell you what it means, right? I can tell you what all these guys' words are saying. But why did I have to tell you, if you look on Tchelet.com, because then you get to see it with your eyes. What's your imagination? Your imagination is when you take something that's in the written word, you take an idea, concept, you take the tefillot that you're saying, and you say, okay, how does this apply to my life? And you try to imagine how I can make my tefillah real. Right? There's a whole school of thought that says, you know, when you're thinking of refuah for somebody, you're doubting that somebody should have a refuah shema, it's very nice to say their name and to say the bracha. But imagine them getting better, right? Take a second and think about what they're going to be like when they're better. It says, the midameh, is the imagination is the garment of the sechel. And he says, by having tzitzit, we're able to really clarify the strength of our imagination that's in our mind. And he says, by having tzitzit, we'll really be able to clarify the strength of our imagination in order to come to a true faith in Hashem's unity and the fact that Hashem remakes the world. That is, every time I see my tzitzit, even if I was heading in one direction, that might have been the wrong direction, and I see my tzitzit, I'll say Hashem Echad, and like we said in that first shir, I'll have this imagination of, wait, Hashem is here with me now, right? Hashem is in charge of all the heavens and all the earth, and every bit in between, and He's here with me now, and I'll have this bit of imagination that's going to remind me of Hashem, it's going to bring me to faith in Hashem, to have real emunah, and it's going to let me make the world anew. The world as it was, I was going to do something wrong. And the new world, because of the tikkun of the beged, and because of tzitzit, which allows me to be metaken, the garment of my mind, which is, I was thinking to do something wrong, and I'm imagining what's actually going to happen if I do something wrong, or before whom I'm doing that wrong thing, it's going to take me in a whole new direction. And it's going to guide me into a new place, and guide me to a new world. And, you know, if you want to say butterfly effect, or if you want to say, you know, what does quantum physics talk about? If you want to talk about probability factors, things like that. So the probability and the new observed reality, as it were, is different than what it would have been. So it's a new world than what it could have been. Ki tzitzit misagel emunah. Tzitzit are specifically a vessel for emunah. They're segula, they're... they're auspicious in terms of bringing someone to Emunah. Val ken kavu parshat tzitzit kriyat shema, and therefore they put the parshat tzitzit together with kriyat shema. When you say kriyat shema, which is Kabbalat ol malchut shemaim, we also say tzitzit. When we take upon ourselves the yoke of the kingdom of heaven, that we serve Hashem, we also put tzitzit in there. V'alken kol haTorah kula tuya b'tzitzit, and therefore you can say that the whole Torah is based on tzitzit. Why? Ki emunah yesod kol haTorah, because we know that emuna is the foundation of all the Torah. There's in Habakkuk, the prophet Habakkuk, it says tzaddik b'emunato yichye, that the righteous lives by his faith. And also in Menachot, actually, the Chazal say that, but it says when we're talking about the whole Torah, it says Bach Habakkuk v'hemdan alachad. And Habakkuk came and put all the mitzvot of the Torah, all Tarag mitzvot of the Torah, into one line. What is into one mitzvah? And what is that? Tzaddik b'emunato yichye, the righteous lives by his faith. It says, with that one line, with this emunah, the tzitzit bring us to emunah. And when we have that emunah, that is the foundation of all the Torah, and that will get us to live by the whole Torah kula. So when we have our tzitzit, we get reminded of Hashem, right? But it's not just intellectual. It gets us thinking. It gets us thinking about Hashem. It gets us imagining about Hashem standing over our shoulder. It gets us imagining about what kind of person do I want to be in the world, what kind of life do I want to lead, what kind of Jew do I want to be, and how do I want to represent my Judaism and myself, to Hashem and to those around me. And by having our tzitzit, they really serve as a guide to let us have the right thoughts and to guide us internally to do it. And it's, you know, seemingly a simple thing to put on your tzitzit, but clearly it's much more profound. And it's really, you know, as we showed, all the different ways to tie the knots are really there to guide us to a particular end, which is emunah in Hashem and fulfillment of kol haTorah kula. We should all be zocha, that we should see our tzitzit, and we should uri temot, we should see them. We should be zocher kol mitzvot Hashem, and the most important part about see temot, and we should actually do them. Bezrat Hashem. Thank you all for coming, and I will see you next week.
Thank you, Rabbi. That was really